Today is the 15th day of Iyar. It's also the 30th day of the Emer. And in the Tanya, the Shir for today is in Perek Mem Ches, chapter 48. It's on page 134, or the number at the bottom of the page is 252. Just to remember the thread, the continuation of the theme, the Alter Rebbe is talking about the love that exists in every Jew as a response to God's love for every Jew. And as he said earlier, in an earlier chapter, the greater the person who initiates the love, the greater is the responsive love, the return love, the reciprocal love. And therefore, in Perek Mem Ches, the Alter Rebbe is describing how much greater God is than the world, and how he abandons all that greatness, puts aside the infinity of his light in order to create a finite world so that we can exist and be in a finite condition. And this brings out within the Jew a reciprocal love, in that he too puts aside that which he finds pleasant and satisfying for himself, and does for God what God needs, even though it takes an effort. So the Alter Rebbe is explaining how the light of God with which God creates the world, the light itself is infinite. And therefore, in order for a finite world to result, to evolve from this infinite light, there has to be many tzimtzumim, severe restrictions of the light, and the infinite light has to be put aside in order that there should be the existence of a finite world. Now, five lines from the top on page 134, the portion for the 15th day of Iyar. V'hine protius ha-tzimtzumim e'chuma, the details of these tzimtzumim, of these contractions that block out and conceal godliness, how they are and what they are, ein kan mokim b'yirah. This is not the place, it would be off the subject to get into the details of how the tzimtzum works. Ach derech klal, generally speaking, hein heim b'chinas hester v'helim hamshochas ha'er v'hachayis. The tzimtzum means the concealment and the hiding of the light and the life, sh'le'yoyer v'yumshach l'tachteinim, that it should not come down and be revealed to the lower worlds, b'b'chinas gilui, in a revealed state. Which means, l'hislabishu l'hashpia b'hen, that this light should not be clothed within the lower being, and in that way give life to the lower being, ulahachayesam lihiyes yeshma'ayin, and to give them life so that they remain in existence, coming from nothingness. In other words, there is an infinite light, and this infinite light is concealed. It is withheld from the lower worlds, and it is not given, and therefore not revealed, in the lower world. Ki'im ma'at mez'er er v'chayis, other than a very small amount of light and life, which is revealed into the world, v'chdei shi'yihiyu b'v'chinas gvul v'tachlis, so that they can exist, but exist in a finite state. Shehi ha'odam u'etes ma'ed, and this little amount of light that does reveal itself into the world is a very small amount. O mamish kelo chashive, and it's literally non-existent as nothing, legabi b'chinas ha'odam b'ligvul v'tachlis, compared to the light of God that is infinite and unrestrained, unrestricted. This little amount of light that does enter into the world, into the created being, is as if it is non-existent compared to the infinite light. Ve'ein beinehem erech v'yachas klal, and they have no common denominator between them at all. They have nothing in common between them. And therefore, there is no way of judging one from the other, of measuring one by the other. Kaneda, as is known, pidush milas erech b'mispar. What does it mean, erech? What does it mean to not have any reference? We know that in numbers, echad b'mispar, the number one, yesh le'erech l'gabi mispar elef alofim, has some significance and some relevance compared to the number million. The number one, the single number one, is relevant and has some significance even in reference compared to the number a million. Why does it have a significance? Shehu chelek echad mini elef alofim, because the number one is a part of the million, because the million is put together of a million ones. So the number one has to have some significance even compared to a million, because the million could not exist without the one. But compared to that which is truly infinite and beyond numbers, ein kenegde shum ever b'mispod. Compared to this infinite existence, all numbers are irrelevant. There is no relevancy at all, there's no significance at all to numbers in general, to any number. Because afilu elef alfei alofim v'ribri vaveis, because even billions or trillions, einan afilu ke'erech misper echad, l'gabi elef alfei alofim v'ribri vaveis. The greatest number, finite number, million or billion or trillion, is not as significant compared to the infinite as the number one is significant compared to the trillion. And we see this clearly in that the number one and the number 10 compared to the trillion, the number 10 is closer to trillion than is number one. It may not be impressively closer, but it is in fact closer to the number 1 trillion than the number one, or the number nine even. So we see that there is a relevance, that there is a significance to the smaller numbers in comparison to the great numbers. But when it comes to comparing it to the infinite, just as the number one is infinitely removed from infinity, there's an infinite gap between the number one and infinity. The distance between the number billion or trillion compared to the infinite, the gap between them is exactly the same. The trillion is as far from infinity as is the number one. So that a trillion hasn't gotten any closer to infinite than the number one. So when we say that there are two things and they have no reference between them, they're be'ein areich, it means not that one is much greater than the other, but it means that they're in completely different universes. One doesn't apply at all in the existence of the other. Elo kilo mamish chashiven, that's why the only way to describe it is that it is non-existent. Not small and insignificant, but non-existent compared to the higher level. So that the finite light which does enter into the world, which can be grasped by the world, is infinitely removed from the infinite light, and therefore it's as if it doesn't exist at all. They exist in separate universes. And so it is with this finite light, that is clothed within the worlds. In other words, it is limited to the capacity of the world, both the higher worlds and the lower worlds, all of them are finite, lahashpiya behem lahachayesam, in order to give them life. This finite light clothes itself in the lower and higher worlds in order that they may exist. This light, legabi erech eir hagonus v'nelam, compared to the light that is infinite and therefore is concealed and hidden, shehu b'bichinas ein seif, because it is limitless, the ein mislabish u'mashpia be'elam eiz b'bichinas gilui l'hachayesom, and therefore it doesn't influence the world by clothing itself within the world in a revealed state. Ela, how then does this finite light influence the world? Makif aleihem milmaila, it surrounds the worlds from above, the nikra seif of kol almim, and that's why that light is called the surrounding light that surrounds all the worlds, that encompasses all the worlds equally, whereas the light that is finite and limited to the capacity of each world, it differs from world to world. The higher world gets a little more light, the lower world gets less light, And that's what makes the higher world higher and the lower world lower. Whereas this light that is infinite, it influences the world not intimately, not by getting clothed in the world and by being limited to the conditions of the finite world, but rather it influences all worlds equally. Because it doesn't involve itself with the world, it can therefore influence all worlds equally. It treats all worlds equally. The Ein HaPirish, Seiviv U'Makiv Milmaila, V'Bechinas Mokim Chas V'Sholem, and the meaning here of surrounding the world from above. Above doesn't mean above outside the world, that the infinite light is not in the world at all, but remains outside the world. It can't mean that, because in the spiritual world there's no such thing as space. In other words, in the infinite light, to say that it is outside the world, then you are limiting it to a place, to a spiritual place, and in the infinite spirituality there is no place, and therefore there is no limitations. So we can't say that the infinite light surrounds the world because it is not in the world. That would be limiting the infinity of the light. But what he means is, it doesn't mean that the infinite light is not in the world. It means that even though it is in the world, it does not influence the world in an obvious way, in a revealed way. Because when there's an influence in the world that is revealed, nikras b'shem halboshim, then it is called clothed, that it is clothed within the world. And that's why it is revealed to the world. Shem mislabeshes be'elameis, that it is clothed within the world, ki hei malbishim u'masigim ha'ashpo shem mekablim. Why is it described as being clothed in the world? Because the world contains it, the world absorbs it, and the world understands it. And therefore it is absorbed or clothed within the world. So that which the world can grasp, that which the world can contain, is described as being clothed within the world. Whereas that influence on the world that comes from the infinite light, and therefore it is not revealed into the world, Elo behester vehelem, and it influences the world in a hidden way, in a concealed way, ve'ein ho'elem es masigim eso, and the world that is influenced by it does not grasp it, does not comprehend it, therefore eino nikras mislabeshes, therefore we can't describe this light as being clothed in the world, since the world is not grasping it, it is not containing it. Elo, how then is it described? Makefes v'seveves. It is described as being transcendent, that it surrounds and encircles. But surrounding and encircling doesn't mean that it stands outside the world and surrounds it. It is inside the world, only its influence is a circular influence, in that it remains hidden beyond the grasp of the world, and instead, just as that which is grasped in the world is called clothed within the world because the world surrounds it, that which cannot be grasped by the world because it is bigger than the world, so in that case the light surrounds or is clothing the world, not clothed within the world, but enveloping and is a garment to the world. The world is absorbed in it, and therefore it is described as surrounding the world. Just as a person studying a concept, and the concept is somewhat above his understanding, and he can't quite grasp it, his mind is lost in the concept, because the concept is surrounding him rather than his surrounding and grasping the concept. Therefore, since the world is finite and with limit, therefore, the infinite light of God is not influencing the world by revealing itself to the world, in a revealed state, and only a little bit of the light, a very limited and a very restricted amount of light is invested into the world, and that is only in order to keep them in existence, that they should be finite and limited. But the main portion of the light, which is not restricted, doesn't go through the tzimtzum, nikra makiv v'seiviv, that is called the surrounding, encompassing light, me'acha she'en hashpose mizgalas b'techom, since the influence of that light is not revealed to the world, me'acha she'en b'b'chinas gvul v'tachlis, because the world can't comprehend, can't contain it, since the world is finite and the light is infinite. Now, when the Alter Rebbe says that there's an infinite light that is not revealed, an infinite godliness that is not revealed in the world, but there's a finite godliness that is revealed in the world, this needs a little bit of explanation. We say that the Hebrew word for world, ha'olam, also has the meaning of helem, of concealment. And it's been described earlier in Tanya that this is a world of klipa, in which godliness is totally concealed, and so on and so forth. So even the finite amount of light that the Alter Rebbe here describes as being revealed to the world, we don't understand where is it revealed. It would seem that even this finite light is concealed, because the world is a dark world and a world of klipa, to where no godliness is revealed at all. So Chassidus explains that there are two ways in which a thing can be concealed. So when we say that something is concealed and hidden, it depends on which kind of hiddenness we're talking about. There is one type of hiddenness, of concealed light, which is concealed because it is withheld. That which is withheld and not given obviously remains concealed from the receiver, from the recipient. As for example, the fact that I don't know what you're thinking, and your thoughts are therefore hidden from me, the reason they're hidden is because they're withheld. When you say what you're thinking, then you're telling me. Then you're sharing with me what you're thinking. But when you don't say what you're thinking, then your thoughts are withheld from me, and therefore they can be described as being concealed from me. And that's the case with the infinite light. The infinite light, which the Alter Rebbe says is completely concealed and hidden from the world, it is concealed and hidden in that it is withheld. And because it's withheld, it is concealed. There's another form of helem, another form of concealment, which comes not from withholding, but in fact, it is given. And it is given totally. And it is given in such a measure so that it fits and can be absorbed and can be grasped and can be appreciated by the recipient. Why then is it hidden? It's hidden in that the recipient begins to believe that he didn't receive it from something above himself, but that it was always his. And that's what we mean when we say that godliness in this world, even the finite amount of godliness in the world, is hidden. The finite amount of godliness is visible in the life and the existence of all creatures, in the growth of the vegetable, in the life of the animal, in the intelligence of the human being, and even in the existence of a stone. All this reveals godliness. Yet, we say that godliness is hidden because even as we look at the godliness that is obvious in the world, which is the light and the life and the existence of all creatures, we can turn around and say that this life and this light and this existence doesn't come from God. It comes from the thing itself. The stone exists by itself. The vegetable grows by itself. The animal is alive by itself. We see the life, and that is given and revealed in a finite measure to the world. When we say that godliness is concealed in the world, it's concealed in that because of the darkness, we don't recognize that this, what we're looking at, which is revealed to us, is actually godliness. We claim that it's part of the physical world. As for example, the body is alive because of the soul. Because the soul animates the body, therefore the body is alive. Now, there are people who don't believe that there's a soul. They believe that the body lives of itself. It has its own life. Now, we demonstrate to these people that since the life of a person varies from time to time, goes through changes, whereas the body does not, while the body is unchanged, that proves that the life of the body depends on something outside of the body. And that's why when a person's asleep, he's not as alive as when he's awake. And this has nothing to do with the body. The body is exactly the same condition whether he's asleep or awake. And even after a person dies, the body remains the same as it was the moment before he died. And yet, there's a radical change in the life of the person, even though there's an only slight change in the body. So obviously, the life is not of the body, but it's something else. There's an neshama. So when we say that a person denies the existence of a neshama, it's not because the neshama is withheld. It's not because the neshama's effect is withheld. The neshama's effect is very real. The person sees that he's alive, and he feels that he's alive, and he appreciates that life. The only thing is he denies that it comes from a neshama. He claims that it comes from the body itself. And why is it that he can make this mistake? For the exact opposite reason of the concealment of the infinite light. We can deny that there is an infinite God because we've never seen him, because it's withheld. We can deny miracles because we've never seen the miracle. Miracles are withheld. Usually the world conducts itself according to nature. God runs the world according to nature. But why is it that we can deny that life comes to the body from the neshama? Precisely because the neshama is so deeply committed and so deeply involved and so deeply invested in the body to the point where we can't separate the two anymore. And it becomes possible to think that the life comes from the body itself. That's how closely intermeshed the neshama becomes with the body. So that finite part of God is given into the world to such a revealed state, it is so obvious, it is so revealed, it is so real, and so much part of our existence that we begin to claim it as ours. That's the natural part of the world. The infinite part of the world, we don't recognize because we never see it. So a miracle that occurs is the bridge between the two. On the one hand, it is a miracle, and therefore we can't claim it as ours. We know that this is not coming from ourselves. It's not coming from the laws of our universe, from the laws of nature. And on the other hand, it is no longer concealed. A miracle revealed tells us two things. It tells us, number one, that there is a power that has been withheld, which is now being revealed, and that is the infinite part of God, that which transcends nature. And it also tells us that that which we thought was nature, in other words, our conviction that only nature can influence our life, we now realize that there are things above nature, and that even what we once thought was nature may not be, may be coming from a higher source. Today's Hayom Yom, the 15th of Iyar, the 30th of the Omer, the Rebbe writes that in the days of the Alter Rebbe, Hasidim would often say, there would be a slogan among Hasidim, that the piece of bread I have is as much yours as it is mine. And they would say yours before they would say mine. Now, according to the law, according to the din in Gemara, your life takes precedent over the other person's life. As in the unusual example of two people who are in a desert and there's only one piece of bread that belongs to me, I'm not obligated to give it away. There's not enough for both of us to survive on. I'm not obligated to give my piece of bread away and save the other person's life. My life comes first. That's the law. But since Hasidus is beyond the letter of the law, l'fnim mishur asadin, therefore Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe would go beyond the letter of the law and they would say that it is yours first and then mine, putting the other person's life before their own.